Welcome into the Amateur Hour podcast mock draft. We're rolling on here with the Utah Jazz. I am joined by Sam Vecini, as always, from CBSSports.com. And now we are joined by Tony Jones from the Salt Lake Tribune. Tony, how you doing today?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
No problem. All right, there's, you know what? When did Trey Burke, why can't he make a jump shot? This bothers me.
You know, that's a great question because, you know, he physically looks like a good jump shooter. I mean, when you look at him shoot the ball, he gets great lift off the floor on his jumper. He has nice form. He has soft touch. He's historically a great free throw shooter. You know, so there should be no reason that he shouldn't be a really good shooter. Now, here's the thing. I mean, he rarely gets separation from defenders, even with the lift off the ground that he gets. And I think that hurts. And I think that, you know, he's really small for his position. I mean, he's listed as 6 foot, but he's actually closer to 5'10", maybe 5'11", at the very most. So, you know, those are probably some of the reasons, along with shot selection, that he hasn't shot the ball well. But when he's open and when he's a standstill jump shooter, he makes more than his fair share.
That's something. As a Michigan fan, I thought he was going to be better in the pros. I knew he would have some problems with the height and the defense and getting and finishing around the lane a little bit, but the amount of jump shots he's missed sort of surprised me, and was upset by that.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing that gets him in trouble the most is his mindset. You know, he's the guy who, you know, he feels like he should be the number one option or number two option whenever he's on the floor, and he's extremely aggressive offensively, and that's both good and bad. It's good because, you know, he's done some things in fourth quarters to where he's actually, you know, saved games for the Jazz. There are times where he has no problems taking shots in the clutch. He has no problems making shots in the clutch. It's bad because sometimes, you know, he takes away from usage from his other teammates, you know, specifically somebody like Gordon Hayward. So, you know, he's a double-edged sword for sure. But, you know, he does have talent. And he does have strong points, and he is an NBA player. He's just got to figure out how to use all of that and to be more effective.
All right. So, Sam, you sounds like you had something. You can go ahead.
Yeah, man, I love Trey Burke coming out of college. I thought I had him number two in that draft class. I thought he was going to be really good. Like you guys said, I thought he was going to be a better shooter. I thought that, you know, he's going to be able to get some separation on his jump shot. He's a very shifty dribbler, but, you know, Tony alluded to it. He's just small, and that's a major problem if you're that small. That's why you're looking at trying to think of an example this year. There's not like a crazy small guard this year that is worrisome, but even someone like a Cam Payne's probably, what is Cam? Cam's like 6'1 or so. That's even a little bit scary.
Yeah, 6'1 too.
Huh?
Yeah, Cam's a legit 6'1 as well.
Yeah, that's fair. Cam is like, he was 6'1 and a half in shoes at the combine, and he's a little bit longer too, so that'll help. But, you know, it's the same kind of principle, though, that worries me with Trey Burke is worries me with Cam Payne a little bit. And I'm sure we might talk about Cam Payne a little bit once we get to the draft pick. But, yeah, it's the same kind of principle because, man, I loved Trey Burke coming out of high school, or coming out of college.
With this roster, it kind of looks like, I mean, Exum, who I still like, I know some people soured on him because of his rookie year, which I don't think is necessarily fair, as he was just getting his bearings coming into the league from such a low level of play. But this team's in a position where, surprisingly, because of what happened with Rudy Gobert this year, that they might be a team that could win now a little bit. I mean, and point guard would be the spot where they could make the biggest improvement. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, and I thought that, you know, I thought that people who were criticizing Dante Exum, you know, it's only a couple of things. It tells me, you know, one, that they're not very patient, and and he had a 19-year-old body, and that, you know, it's unfair to place expectations on somebody that essentially had a high school body. So, you know, I think that Exum has a chance to be a really good player in this league, and I think that he had a positive impact on the Jazz and on the organization in the second half of the season.
Yeah, you know, I really like the way that they went about developing him this season. Like the statistical criticism is kind of absurd, and like you said, it shows that a lot of people weren't really watching. It seems like the Jazz specifically went about trying to correct some of his weaknesses and forcing him to do things that, you know, he wasn't really known for coming out of Australia, the things that even were considered perceived weaknesses coming out for him. They made him improve as a catch-and-shoot jumper, even at Summer League last year. If you look at Summer League last year compared to, you know, March this year, the improvement in his jump shot is incredible. He looks much more comfortable catching and shooting the ball. His defense this year was legitimately useful. Like, he was a plus defender at the point guard position as a rookie, and that is very difficult to do. And you would have thought that it would have gone the other way. You would have thought that he would struggle to defend opposing point guards, just being so skinny and being so inexperienced. But he really got after it. He really, really, like you said, came up and got around screens, and he really made life difficult for opposing point guards. So I really like the way Utah went about developing him this year. I think that it's going to help him in the future, but he's still, I think, probably 2 years away from being a like legitimate all-star impact player like they're hoping for him to be.
You know, the thing that was funny about Dante Exum is that he proved, at least in his first year, and this is a good thing that I'm about to say, he proved the exact opposite of the scouting report. So, you know, coming into the draft, this is a scouting report. This is a guy that's getting to the basket. You know, he gets to the basket, he finishes on top of the rim, but he can't defend. He turned out to be a guy who wasn't ready to take that step to get to the basket, but he turned out to be a plus defender. And as you said, it's extremely difficult for a rookie at the point guard position in the NBA to be a plus defender, especially at a spot where you can arguably say that it's the most talented spot overall through the league. You know, so, you know, you still know that these attributes that made him desirable as a lottery pick, as a top five pick, are still there. You know, he has that elite first step. You can see it. When he gets to the rim, and he can finish on top of the rim, he finishes on top of the rim. You can see that. He's just got to get stronger, and he's just got to become a man. And that's the thing with Dante Exum. And you know, even if it takes 2 or 3 years down the road for him to become, as you said, Sam, an all-star level kind of impact guy, well, guess what? He's still 22, 23 years old, 2 or 3 years down the road, so it will evolve and work it. And the fact is, Dante Exum was 25-16 as a starter this year, and that's a 50-win pace, and this was him basically at his basement. You know, so even as he gets better, he's proven, the Jazz have proven that they can win with him in the starting lineup, and they've proven that they can win with him developing. That's why I think it's a little bit absurd that people will go around and talk and say, hey, you know, the Jazz should upgrade the point guard spot this year. No, they should keep developing Dante Exum, because the guy legitimately has the ceiling to be one of the top 5 or 6 or whatever you want to say point guards in the league.
It's kind of amazing that for a team that's so young and they're just kind of in the acquiring talent mode, how well this team fits together and how much sense it makes. Like, you go to the Two Guard, and they had all that success in the second half of the season, and Alec Burks wasn't there, but they had Rodney Hood involved. Hood and Burks are two guys that complement each other very well, because you can get different things from them at the Two Guard position. Hood shot 36% from three. Burks is more a guy who... he shot pretty good from three this year, but it was a small sample size. But he can get to the rim off the bounce. You think there's more than enough playing time and room for all these three guys?
Yes, and that is if they don't bring in a fourth wing. If they draft the fourth wing, you know, say Stanley Johnson or whoever, you know, that's coming in and say, okay, I know I'm the fourth wing, I'm going to play, you know, 15 minutes a night, that's one thing. But if you have, you know, if you have a three-wing rotation of Rodney Hood, Alec Burks, and Gordon Hayward, all of those guys can play 30 minutes a night, you can keep them relatively fresh. Now, the thing that makes that wing rotation intriguing is that, you know, as you said, all three of them give you different things. You know, Alec Burks is one of the better guys in the league at drawing fouls and getting to the rim and getting to the foul line. That's a valuable asset for any team to have, somebody that can really draw fouls. You saw with Houston and James Harden, he's basically a pro at that. Gordon Hayward, you know, in my estimation, is one of the top five small forwards in the league. You know, and he can go out there, he can, he's essentially right now a 25-5 kind of guy. And Rodney Hood is a standstill shooter. He's a catch-and-shoot guy. But he's also a guy that can handle the ball on the screen. And he's also, you know, he's also the guy out of that, out of those three who I think can score consistently at all three levels. And, you know, Gordon Hayward can score at all three levels, but I think that Rodney Hood can really score at all three levels. He can score consistently from the perimeter. He gets into that mid-range, gets to a spot, he can pull up from a 15-footer, and he can also get to the rim off the dribble. So I think that those three guys are really potent, and if they can stay healthy and they can match together, it'll be a really potent rotation.
So given that you said that you think there's a pretty solid three-wing rotation there, and, you know, it seems like you're pretty confident in both of the point guards that they have in play, or at least confident in Burke as a backup point guard, you would think. Do you think that the Jazz will likely look big with this pick?
You know, I think they're going to go best player available. I think they can go a number of ways with this pick. I think that the only thing that will really surprise me is if they chose a point guard. And if they did choose a point guard, then that tells me Trey Burke is possibly in peril. His roster spot is probably in peril. But I would be surprised if they chose a point guard. But I wouldn't be surprised if they chose anything else to provide. What I think that they could do is, you know, they could choose somebody that has a high ceiling guy, and I think they could choose somebody that they can develop for down the road. Because I think they realize that whoever they draft this season, you know, they're not going to come in and start. You know, I've said this a couple of times, but, you know, if the Jazz were to get the number one pick and they were to draft Karl Anthony Towns, you know, Karl Anthony Towns wouldn't come in and start right away for the Jazz. Mm-hmm. You know, not on this roster. So, you know, whoever they're going to draft, you know, unless there's a rash of injuries at his position, that person is not going to play more than 15 to 20 minutes a night.
So who are some of the guys that you're interested in at this point for that Jazz pick?
You know, I think that, you know, somebody like R.J. Hunter is an intriguing option. I think Devin Booker is definitely an intriguing option. I think that Kevon Looney and Bobby Portis are both intriguing options as well. I think that Trey Lyles is an intriguing option. I think that, you know, all five of those guys are guys who can develop. I think that those guys are guys that can play possibly two positions. And I think that that's something that the Jazz are looking for. And the Jazz are definitely looking for shooters. And I think that Booker and Hunter really fit that bill. You know, so I think that there are a number of ways that they can go, but I think that those are some of the guys that could be intriguing on draft night.
Do you think Booker's going to be back? Because if he's not, they do have a need for a big off the bench that could play with either Favors or Gobert, kind of for a three big man rotation.
You know, the thing with Trevor Booker is, he is a fan favorite because of how hard he plays, because of, you know, some of the impacts that he's made in games, and frankly, because of, you know, the way he stood up for the Jazz organization. numbers work, you know. Trevor Booker is a guy that you can easily throw in a trade like that. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens to him. But, you know, I think that heading into the summer, I think that I would bet on him being back in the Jazz. You know,
he also made the greatest shot in NBA history.
Yes, that was the greatest. I was sitting like 5 feet away from there. And I couldn't believe that he made that shot. That was one of the greatest shots I've ever seen.
I was so happy. That made me so happy. I was just like, yes, that happened in a real live NBA game.
So you alluded to a trade possibility there. Do you think there's a good chance, or even, not even a good chance, it's even like a chance at all, that the Jazz could look to improve substantially by trading this pick and moving towards a win-now mode?
You know, I think that regardless, I think that they realize that they're in a win-now mode. I think that they realize that they have something very special with Rudy Gobert. And I think they realize they have something special with their front court in general. You know, and I think that that's why they really want more shooting to surround that front court. Because there were times that the Jazz just couldn't score. Because, you know, they can't space or, you know, like a traditional NBA team. For as good as the front court of Gordon Hayward, Derek Favors, and Rudy Gobert has proven to be, defensively, you know, offensively, they sometimes have trouble with spacing. So I think that they realize that they need shooting. But, you know, the one thing that Dennis Lindsay has always said, and he said this for a couple of months, he said, you know, our biggest offseason acquisition could very well be the return of Alec Burks. And I think that people are going to be surprised at how much Burks opens up that offense with his ability to get to the rim and his ability, you know, to grab a rebound and go coast to coast and his ability to score off the dribble. And, you know, I think that, you know, having either Burks or Hood come off the bench and run the second unit, I think that helps the second unit as well. I think that Joe Ingles returning to the second unit, I think that that would also help the second unit as well. You know, so it'll be interesting to see if you know, they try to upgrade or if they try to ride out this group. But, you know, if you look at a couple of years down the road, you know, Gordon Hayward can opt out of his contract in 2 years. And really go and get big money. And so I think the Jazz realize that they need to make the playoffs. They need to show real tangible improvement because it'll be a lot harder for Gordon Hayward to potentially walk away from a playoff team than it would to be to potentially walk away from a team that's still struggling and kind of running the treadmill and still being in the lottery. So I think that there is a little bit of pressure to make tangible improvement. So I would say because of that, I would say that the Jazz would be in a win now mode as soon as this upcoming season.
I love how much you love Burks, and where I think he can really help is as Exum's still developing and he's not really ready to have the keys of the offense and have it run through him and initiate everything, you can kind of use Burks, because they didn't really get to play with each other much, because Exum wasn't in the rotation as much when Burks was healthy this season. He didn't really get into the rotation till later on, that you have Burks as that guy who plays with Exum, and then you use Hood to play off of Trey Burke and let him do the spot-up shooting, that those pairs kind of make conceptual sense next to each other.
Yeah, I think so as well. And, you know, that's the beauty of Alec Burks. He can handle the ball and he can, you know, he can take pick and rolls. And, you know, and essentially Dante Exum was a 3-and-D guy last year. He was a guy that, you know, brought the ball up. He passed it to Gordon Hayward. He went to the corner. He spotted up. If he had a spot up shot, he took a 3-pointer. And then he went back and he played really good defense. So, you know, by that definition, he was pretty much 3-and-D last season. recently did a story on him, and you know, he said that that's one of the goals, is to work towards being more of a floor general this season. And I think that Alec Burks can help in both of those concepts. I think that, you know, he can take pressure off of Exum, ball handling. I think that he can provide a nice outlet for Exum if Exum goes to the basket. And I think that Burks takes pressure off of Hayward, and I think that he takes pressure off of Rodney Hood as well. And here's the other thing about Burks. You know, in today's era of downsizing, I mean, you can potentially see a lineup of Dante Exum, Alec Burks, Rodney Hood, Rudy Gobert, and Gordon Hayward as a Suedo stretch four. You know, so I think that, you know, the fact that Alec Burks comes back, I think that it offers the lineup a lot of versatility and flexibility, and I think that that'll help the Jazz a lot.
Oh, God, I would love that lineup.
I love this team. I really do.
The lineup is you can switch everything.
Yeah.
That's the thing about how that lineup will be. You can just switch everything.
Yeah, and pretty much everyone except Gobert can shoot the three in that lineup, which I'm sure Quinn Snyder would like. It would not surprise me if we saw that lineup pretty regularly next year, actually, or at least as regularly as you can get with those small ball lineups. Exhausted all of the possibilities here on what the Jazz can do.
I am going to pick Devin Booker.
So what do you, I think that it's pretty obvious from this podcast what you like about Booker, but how specifically do you think that he'll fit into Utah's scheme?
I think that Booker fits well in the Utah scheme. I think that he's somebody that can absolutely play the two. I think that he's somebody that can potentially play the three. You know, there were times last year where he looked like Kentucky's elite offensive guy. He's a guy that can stroke, that can really stroke the ball. He knows the game. You know, I think that he's a guy that's young. He can grow with the team. He's only 19. He can be developed. And I think that he's somebody that holds real intrigue. And I think that that's the way. If I just had to pick one guy, I think that that's the guy that I would pick.
Interesting. I think I would go a different direction, but like you said, you know, this team could really use a nice outside shooter to pair with all of their potential lineups. You know, the guy I would probably go with here is Bobby Portis, but I mean, I have a man crush on Bobby Portis, as regular podcast listeners will attest to. The reason I would go Portis here is I think that, A, he'd give you some insurance for Trevor Booker if he ended up leaving, maybe even after next year, because like you said, he has a team option. This is his last year on his contract. Portis would also give them a little bit of a shooting threat from the power forward position. That's something that neither Gobert nor Favors really give. They don't really give that give that 18-foot range that, you know, I think that Quinn Snyder could do a lot with and that they could actually do a lot with. He can switch screens defensively, so it wouldn't really hurt that way. And, you know, the one thing that he's not particularly good at is rim protection, and Gobert would be a very good fit for him there. So I would probably go Bobby Portis, but I think that Devin Booker's a pretty strong pick here with Utah.
I think that Bobby Portis is a guy who's intriguing as well. I think that he's
I totally agree. You were at the Jazz workout today where he was, I believe. How was he and how was Kevon Looney?
You know, I looked at Kevon Looney, man, and, you know, you kind of fall in love with his body because, you know, he has a freakish wingspan, and, you know, he has broad shoulders, and he has, you know, he has a frame that can carry 25 more pounds. Mm-hmm. And if he can become more skilled, if he can, you know, figure out how to hit that NBA corner three-pointer, you know, he has skill sets that translate from college to pros. You know, he's a plus rebounder. He's always been a plus rebounder. He was, you know, he played a little bit of small forward at the high school level. You know, not much, but a little bit. So, you know, he's a good passer. You know, he's a guy that could develop into, you know, the prototypical stretch four. I mean, I can see him being a Tristan Thompson type of guy with more ball skills. You know, so Looney is definitely intriguing. You know, I heard that he and Portis really battled and went back and forth, and I heard that they kind of got the best of each other. They did match up with each other. So it's definitely interesting because those are two pieces that are definitely in play for the number 12 spot.
Yeah, I interviewed Looney in November for something that I wrote for CBS, and you just look at him and your jaw just drops with his arms. They're incredibly long. It's kind of unlike any prospect in this draft, really, just given his frame. Like, even Montrezl Harrell has very, very long arms, even a longer wingspan than Looney, but it just looks different on Looney's body because Looney has really broad shoulders and a really skinny frame that, you know, like you said, can support 25 pounds. It's really going to be interesting to see which direction he goes.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know, he's one of those upside guys that I think that the draft, the Jazz, you know, could really afford to. They're in a position where they can afford to pick, you know, somebody with a really high ceiling that, you know, you can develop for 2 or 3 years down the road. Because, I mean, I can see Looney, I mean, the kid is 19, but I can see him as a 23-year-old guy who, you know, who's potentially a monster. You know, and if you put him next to Gobert and you use the rim protection from Gobert and the rim protection from Looney, I mean, you're blocking a lot of shots. and you're getting a lot of rebounds in there. And, you know, and the thing that intrigues me about Looney is that he can become more skilled. Yes, you know, he has the basketball skill set that I think that, you know, you can see him putting the ball on the floor. You can see him hitting jump shots. So, you know, he's a guy who I think has some two-way potential that could be tough to pass up.
He had the one thing I saw with him, he has like one little extra motion in his shot that he could probably clean up and just make it go a little smoother and quicken his release a little bit. That's one area I thought he could improve upon. I got to watch him and Portis worked out together in Phoenix, and we were in early enough to watch the shooting drills. And he brings it like across, in, and up. If he just could find a way to just bring it straight up instead of having that one extra motion, I think that could really help him at the next level.
Yeah, I think so as well. You know, the thing, and that's what you think about the Jazz. You know, they're proving to have a really good player development kind of program going on. And, you know, I think that most of the guys that when Quinn took over, most of the guys on the roster, look at those guys in September, and then you look at those guys in April, and I thought that all of those guys were better basketball players. You know, so that's why I think that the Jazz can take a high-risk, high-reward type of guy, because I think that they have a really good player development staff there.
All right, sounds like things are heading on up for the Jazz. Tony, thank you very much for taking time out. Is there anything you want to get out there or plug, let our listeners know about?
Yeah, you know, just follow me on Twitter. I'm at TJonesFLTrib. I'll make it worth your while.
Tony's a fun follow. You should do it.
A lot.
Okay, so go check out the Twitter handle when we get this out there. We'll make sure we attach your tag so everyone that follows us on the web and the Hardwood and Paraxum sees all that. That's Tony Jones from the Salt Lake Tribune, and that wraps up another Amateur Hour podcast mock draft.